Hi there. If you like what we do here at ProWrestling.net and want to show us some support, make sure to become a ProWrestling.net member. For $7.50 a month if you just want to try it out, or $5.50 a month if you want to take the annual option, you get ad-free access to the ProWrestling.net website, both on the web and mobile web. I think both are the internet, but still. Plus, you get access to all of our member-exclusive audio updates, including reviews of every major wrestling show and the .NET Weekly Audio Show, where Jason Powell and a guest often talk first-run news, talk the news of the week, and get you kind of in a good headspace for wrestling that week. If you have any questions about it, hit up Jason Powell on Twitter, and we would love your support. Additionally, review us on iTunes, retweet the links when Jason puts them out, tell your friends about the ProWrestling.net All Access podcast. Thanks so much. Enjoy the show. This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, the format, the performers, and the best of the Mae Young Classic. So, Jake, even though there's not much happening in the world of wrestling right now, I'm still backed up on the wrestling to watch scale because WWE decided to drop 4 one-hour episodes of the Mae Young Classic on Monday. I'll just ask you first, what do you think of the idea of just 4 episodes at all at once, the whole first round of the tournament? There it is.
I like it. I think people are just accustomed to watching things that way now. You know, there's a lot of streaming services out there, and many of them will drop an entire season, you know, of a TV show at once and just kind of let people consume at their own pace. So this makes a lot of sense to me.
It makes sense to me, too, especially for WWE, that I think it's something they haven't tried in the past. They keep they kind of kept pushing the it's live on the network right now thing for a long time. And I don't know anyone who watches the live stream of WWE Network. I mean, I watch WCW pay-per-views to fall asleep sometimes, but I don't watch them on the live stream. I go to a specific WCW pay-per-view that I feel like experiencing until I pass out.
And I mean, how far can you get into those? Like 20 minutes? It must be very effective, but
it works really well. It literally is like WCW pay-per-views are like 99 and year 2000 Nitros are what I watch when I can't like turn my brain off and I need to go to sleep.
Mind numbing is the perfect way. Yeah, there you go. I really don't know what the advantage of having something live on the network was. It's experimental. They're trying different things. I can see why they would, you know, the live TV is a hook for some people. So maybe live on the network might work, you know, in this same way.
And it does for pay-per-views.
Yeah, I think so. And so, you know, there's some, I guess, you know, empirical evidence that they could probably point to that would tell you, you know, this works. And so they went forward with it. But with something that everybody, you know, who follows wrestling and would be likely to watch the Mae Young Classic, and people have known, you know, the first few rounds have been in the can for almost a month now. So I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense to trickle it out there. People would have just been sort of grumpy about that, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think people would have been bugged if it were a week by week thing. And I think we saw that with the Cruiserweight Classic a little bit, that people weren't exactly psyched about having to wait a week, even though each episode was well structured and led into the next one. And that's kind of the next thing I want to talk about on the Mae Young Classic, the format of it. It's very Cruiserweight Classic-esque. What do you think of the way it's been formatted thus far? The way, you know, kind of the bumpers of each show, the beginning and end, and the little get to know you packages about the wrestlers in it.
I've been a fan of it. I think there's a little bit lost in the speed at which you're forced to sort of digest all this information, especially for people who you're only going to see once, you know, they're the losers in the first round. Like you're just kind of given this, little bit of expository information. You get to watch them have maybe a 5, 10, 15 minute match if you're lucky. And then, you know, they may be gone forever back in developmental. Now, you know, I think as far as the production values go, everything's been very slick. And I think it's been well done. Some of the And you mentioned this too, I believe, on your Twitter, but some of the mix on the commentary has been a little bit off, but that seems to be the case for all of these WWE produced shows for some reason. But overall, I think the, you know, the attempt made to try to get as much information as they can about each of the women out there has been well executed.
Yeah, and I like the video packages. I'm with you, though, in that it seems like I forget the losers real quick, or especially as I'm watching. Now I'm two episodes in. You've seen all four. So as I've been watching, I don't remember every single person on the show every single time. But I think that's just what happens when you're trying to introduce 16-32 new women into the show. Like, you're literally trying to rapid fire intro these people that you may only see once. And one of the people that made one of the biggest impressions on me was Kaylee Ray, because I've heard her name a ton. I've seen her work in progress a little bit, and I then ended up bummed out when she lost, because I wanted to see more from her in this tournament and really see more of the introductory video packages about her. But I think she will do just fine, and we'll end up finding out a lot more about her anyways.
Yeah, I think they've done, you know, an admirable job of trying to get the personalities defined. But it is tough when, you know, you're having three or four matches on a show, and you got to get all the women involved, their first introductions into the WWE, into the audience. It's just a lot of information to get across. And I don't think, you know, there would have been any better way to structure it that would have gotten everything to sink in for each one of these women. So it was just an admirable attempt. And I think, you know, if you're somebody who's really into this and you really want to understand more about all these women, you're probably just going to have to watch all these episodes more than once, because that's really the only way you're going to process everything.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if WWE wants people to do that. Again, with the way they've dropped it, it's a lot like a House of Cards or something like that is shown, and I wonder if they want people to go back and, hey, you binged it, now just watch it slowly throughout the week before we release the next four episodes. How do you feel about the time frame for the next four episodes, where you kind of have to cram them all in before you get to watch the live final, because everything does lead up to the live final?
You know, I don't mind having a future date out there for the final. You know, people are going to have to fit it into their schedule to try to watch quite a bit of wrestling. But I don't know, you know, with the way you can sort of skip around and see what you want on the network, you know, that if you watch the first round and you got some early favorites, you know, you can probably, you know, watch the shows by kind of moving things around at your own pace. You don't necessarily have to watch all the video packages if you don't want to. You know, there's going to be plenty of opportunity to sort of speed through it if you're behind and you need to catch up quickly. So that's one of the advantages of being at your own pace and having the live final out there. I think it will at least encourage people to try to digest as much of it as they can if they want to watch the final live. You know, there may be people that just don't care about that either.
I think it's actually a really smart thing, because it is WWE leveraging both sides of what they do. They can produce good, compelling content, and they can produce live content. And those things are different sometimes, and sometimes they're the exact same. But it feels like them saying, hey, we're going to really make the best of this. We are going to do everything we can to make sure that it's good, it's compelling, it works leading up to it, but it all leads up to a date that we're going to make people watch in mass, that we're going to make an event out of, that it will be the social media event that WWE likes their big live shows to be. And I like the joining of the two in that way here, because, hey, I can stream the entire thing, but I have a deadline. Jake, I'm one episode into the latest season of House of Cards, because I there's no deadline. Like, I'll watch it sometime. Like, I just haven't watched it. But with the Mae Young Classic, it does feel like there is pressure to get it all in before that final. And I like that. I think it's an interesting combination of the streaming and binging culture and WWE's live event culture.
Yeah, I think that's a good summation of what's going on here. I do, you know, appreciate the you know, the idea that they're going to give these women eventually, you know, at least the ones that make it to the final, a live event to kind of cap things off and, you know, really give it some promotion and make it feel important. And so, you know, it gives them something to work towards, too. And I'm sure, you know, there'll be other matches on that show besides the final that kind of showcase some of the women that WWE may be, you know, close to signing or has already signed to really give them some momentum heading into wherever they're going to appear. I do think there's probably quite, you know, a few of these women that could go immediately to the main roster. They do seem pretty polished, but there's others that definitely could use some time in NXT, but still show quite a bit of promise too.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good talent here and talent at various stages of readiness. And that's fine. I actually appreciate that about this, that not everyone is quite ready for prime time, and it does feel like the Cruiserweight Classic in that as well. Who are you seeing in this first round that really looks ready, that you watch and think, okay, that woman, she belongs on the main roster. She could be in a tag division on the main roster, or could be a part of like the Raw or SmackDown women's divisions.
I guess there's a few that have, you know, stuck out as being, you know, I guess above the rest of the pool. I think Toni Storm is one that they could sign and use immediately. I think Dakota Kai is another one, you know, that could probably end up on the main roster immediately. Kairi Sane or Kairi Hojo, depending on where you knew her from originally, is ready. Like her, you know, her opening round match with was just fantastic. So it's hard for me to just point at anybody that WWE is kind of been developing internally and say that they look like they're ready. I think Lacey Evans might be the closest. I think she's got a well-developed character, and she was competent enough in the ring to where it's like, okay, you know, she could start appearing at least, you know, with a little bit of time in NXT, she could be on the main roster soon. But I think there's some of the women who have been working, you know, for several years in the indies that may be, you know, really close, like, you know, Kimberly or Abby Lath and Piper Niven are probably others that you could potentially move into a tag division or maybe even the main roster really quickly, because it's just they're so good in the ring and they have very well defined personalities. It's like, okay, these people are ready to go, but the others, it just kind of feels like there's something missing there.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. And one of the things I like in these tournaments is kind of the wide swath of talent you get. That's always it's really fun to check out. So, Jake, I mean, I would definitely recommend anyone who hasn't watched yet, spend your weekend watching it. It'll be a good time. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely worth a watch, especially because it's going to give you, you know, a sneak peek into what you can expect from the future of the women's division. I don't think WWE choosing, you know, this set of women was an accident. They clearly have an interest in them, and they want, you know, them to find a way to make it into the promotion eventually, whether it's, you know, filling up the ranks of NXT after that roster becomes depleted, or maybe even some of them might make their way to the main roster rather quickly. But, you know, 32 women, I would assume a good portion of them will end up getting signed, whether it's to, you know, developmental deals for NXT, or maybe some of them might end up quickly ascending up to the main roster. But no matter what ends up happening here, I think the Mae Young Classic represents, you know, what WWE sees as the future of their women's division. And I think it's a fairly bright future. It's just a matter of making that translate to the main roster, where the women's division seems to be really languishing right now, which is unfortunate given the timing of this tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I would have a lot more confidence right now if we were talking about the women's division is absolutely on fire at this point. But you know what? It will. Everything in wrestling catches fire again at some point. It's pretty cyclical, and I agree with you in that it does look like a bright future.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.